This podcast brought to you by the English Department at Florida State University.
So you can tell that our two readers are friends because I am a double feature tonight. Thank you for bearing with me yet again. Mr. Tom Bevilacqua is here to tell you about a pilgrimage he made to the grave of his beloved Jack Kerouac. But first, there is something I need to get out of the way. I am a huge fan of Tom, but I hate Jack Kerouac. This is only one of Tom and my many quarrels, but let me protest that I feel particularly entitled to this one because I once had a job helping to run the Kerouac estate. I spent many afternoons with his aging family members and ex-wives yelling at me and squabbling over licensing rights for inspirational magnets that read The Mad Ones, which Jack himself surely would have hated. And it was on one of these afternoons, when I was feeling grumpy about the Kerouacs as I was rearranging the archives, that I felt entitled to make a photocopy of an original Kerouac letter, an offense for which I certainly should have been fired. But I wasn't. So here are some highlights from that letter, never before heard, that I stole as an invocation for Tom's reading. Kerouac wrote to his friend Don, "God, the whole poetry racket is full of fickle girls. Writers are so evil, nasty, virulent, jealous, shitty. This letter must sound like an outrage." He goes on to complain about a lot of other things, to talk about the Buddha, etc. And then he signs off, "Here's to you, my sweet Don, and don't stop loving me as I love you, comma, good." There is something really wonderful about this. The way Kerouac points out the nastier bits of writer culture, but then by the end finds himself signing off with love. And when I read this, I think of our own writing community here in Tallahassee, how we have our spats, our complaints, our huffiness sometimes, me more than most, but ultimately how this is a supportive community, a good, loving one. And there is perhaps no better example of what makes this department worthy of a loving sign-off like Jack's here than Tom. He's an exemplary citizen of the English department. He classes up the joint with his ensembles, yes, but he is also the sort of guy who will watch your pet chinchilla while you're away. Or who brings you back a toy peacock from Flannery O'Connor's Andalusia. Or even who will DVR the Met game for you so you can come to the warehouse and introduce your friends. Let's go, Mets. And these are the sorts of small goodnesses that make all of Kerouac's complaints about writers fall flat, that make us all very lucky to be here, and especially lucky to know Tom. Because for Tom, at the end of the day, it always comes down to the books, to his readerly love of the books, which years of scholarly work have not made any less visceral, and which has certainly made him a better scholar, too. And in his creative writing, he emulates the quiet, potent style of his heroes like Walker Percy. And in this essay he will share with you tonight, he considers the kind of journey one might take to best pay homage to that other hero, Jack Kerouac. I should tell you as well that Tom Bevilacqua is a doctoral candidate currently writing a dissertation on mid-20th century American Catholic authors. Fellow writer and scholar Chris Jensen once said that Tom Bevilacqua is a modern-day Hemingway in that he drinks a lot and has a cat. Tom admits that Chris once beat him at Trivial Pursuit. Tom's work will appear in Routledge Encyclopedia of Modernism and the biannual online Springsteen Studies Journal, as well as the Hemingway Review. He is from Alameda, California, and has a cat named Jack. You can probably guess its namesake. Please welcome Tom Bevilacqua.
Thank you, CJ, and let me take this opportunity to say by The Fromaways by CJ Hauser, published 2014, William Morrow Press, available in paperback wherever good paperbacks are sold, like the bookshelf in Thomasville, Georgia, where the wonderful Chris Jensen works. Chris Jensen, who also wrote and read a wonderful essay, and I feel a little nervous and anxious being up here reading after that. So thank you, Chris, for sharing that and for being a part of the... I'm going to do this a little bit. Ooh. For being a part of this night of creative nonfiction. And thank you as well to Colleen and Sakina for being wonderful hosts, as well as Keith for letting me, the lit student, interlope on this... fun bit of creative writing. Hello? Hi, Misha. How are you? Oh, like that. Oh. Can I do it? Oh. And thank you to Misha Rye for helping me through life in general, but especially with this microphone issue. And so, yes, I will go ahead and read this essay, which is about a trip I took to Lowell, Massachusetts to visit the grave of a writer I love, CJ not so much, Jack Kerouac. It wasn't the greatest surprise that Lowell, Massachusetts in January would be a chilly, snow-covered locale. What struck me on the first morning waking up in that northeastern mill town was how bright the snow looked, catching and reflecting the sunlight that made its way through the gray clouds overhead. Looking out the window of my hotel room, I could feel the onset of a headache from the brilliant sheen of the landscape. Before I came there, I had steeled myself for the constant cold, but I wasn't prepared for the other effects of the snow that had accumulated on the ground over the past few days and weeks. Perhaps I was flummoxed to find myself in Lowell at all, visiting the birthplace and seeing the gravesite of Jack Kerouac in the heart of the winter. If you'd asked me a year before, hell, 6 months before, where I'd be spending the first days of 2008, I would have said back home in the San Francisco Bay Area, or perhaps in Austin getting ready to begin my final semester of college at the University of Texas. Instead of something a little more relaxing, a little bit more stationary, I elected for a trip through the Northeast, a trip that was brought on by one thing, well, one person. I'd flown from Austin to New York City on the morning of January 2nd, exhausted after a raucous New Year's Eve and hoping New Year's Day's black-eyed peas would bring me good traveling luck, to see an exhibit on Kerouac at the New York Public Library, on the author, where they would be displaying the famous On the Road scroll. Following my visit to New York, after stopping in the coffee shops and bars in Greenwich Village and winding through Bleecker and McDougal streets like Bob Dylan on the freewheeling album cover, unfortunately minus Susie Rotolo, I would be venturing to Lowell, Kerouac's hometown, to visit, pay homage, make the pilgrimage to whichever cliche you'd like, Jack Kerouac's grave, to pay my respects to this author who had been such an important figure in my life. Knowing it was completely irrational how much importance I was giving this act, visiting his grave would not make me an appreciably better reader of his work or a stronger writer, and perhaps owing to my Catholic nature and understanding the idea of salvation through grace and works, I believe that there would be some kind of illumination or blessing that could come by making this journey to the author's final resting place, like praying before the bones or other relics of a medieval saint. That's not what I would tell other people, of course. I'd say something about the historical import and frame it in an objective and reasonable way, but I knew why I was going there. I trudged out of my hotel, my heavy gray overcoat pulled tight against my body as it would go, hands thrust into the pockets, struggling to keep warm since I'd forgotten to bring gloves. In New York, the wind whipped through the streets, turning the space in between Manhattan's skyscrapers into wind tunnels. It was a biting, bitter cold that made the tip of your nose and your cheeks burn when you came back inside. The wind in Lowell was not as strong, but while there were only a few flakes that fell in New York while I was there, and they would be crushed by the bustling human and automotive traffic, there were already quite a few inches of snow on the ground in Lowell. The night of my arrival, it had snowed extensively, the cold temperatures allowing the snow to stick and the piles of snow grew on the streets. I arrived on a Sunday, so the town was fairly sleepy. Most of the shops and businesses were closed. At night, the streetlights mixed with the white mounds lining the sidewalks to give the city a muted orange hue. But in the light of the morning, that softness was gone, and the light of the city had a hard edge. This trip had been years in the making. After first reading On the Road, that most famous of Kerouac's novels, and the impetus for many young men and women, though let's face it, mostly young men, to take off and explore the country itself or the larger metaphorical world of experience in life. It is a book that, when someone talks about it, they invariably mention how it affected their life. I would know. I am one of those people. Reading Kerouac's rapturous and ecstatic prose with a character like his narrator Sal Paradise, who sets off across the country in search of experience, of knowledge, of understanding of it, capital I, capital T, I felt something shift or come alive as I started to realize that I too longed for a life that was full of those things and was true to that desire. But rather than being catapulted into a trek across the vast expanses of America, traipsing from one side of the country to the other, I began a more interior journey and started down a metaphorical road. Though I was certainly no stranger to literature, I knew coming into college I would major in English, though seeing it as a means to get into law school. I never considered literature... I'm glad that was funny. I never considered literature and writing as something I could do with my life. My experience reading Kerouac's novel, responding to its overflowing joy and the desire for a more authentic connection with the universe as, and I'm going to quote here from Kerouac, quote, all the golden lands ahead of you and all kinds of unforeseen events wait lurking to surprise you and make you glad you're alive to see, end quote. As his characters, quote, lean forward to their next crazy venture beneath the skies, end quote. Was to realize that literature could affect me in this strong way, and thus it was something I wanted to work on as a career, or, to put it another way, where'd it go? Oh, it's another way that I saw as a vocation. Hey, there it is. My road, different from the road of Sal and Dean Moriarty's, but a road nevertheless, was one that led to the library and to the bookstore to read and write, a road that would lead me to spend the better part of the next year and a half reading every other book by Kerouac I could get my hands on, along with those works that inspired Kerouac and those works inspired by Kerouac, subsequently causing the bookshelves in my apartment to buckle under stress. But Kerouac, and On the Road in particular, made me realize that literature was not just something that I enjoyed, and writing not just something I did well, but that it was something I wanted to devote myself to. Though I probably would have been better served taking a cab directly to the cemetery to make this a truly Kerouacian act of reverence and appreciation, I would go it alone and make my way on foot. Though the slight breeze would occasionally blow flakes of snow into my face that would cling to my beard or stick to the inside of my glasses, I thought I could handle the weather. Using a very vague and small map given to me at the front desk of my hotel, I tried to discern the path I would take there. However, finding a cemetery was not as easy as finding a major building or landmark that you could just look up and see in the skyline, or something that you could just walk into a local business and ask someone where it is. Short of Père Lachaise Cemetery in Paris, a cemetery is generally not a large tourist attraction, so people aren't attuned to questions about where to find one. Even the man working at the front desk seemed unsure about my questions. I'm trying to visit Edison Cemetery and don't really know how to get there. What way is best? Also, is trying to walk there a terrible idea or not? Yeah, I think you could walk. It's only a mile or so that way, he said, as he gestured in the most general of fashions out the hotel's front entrance towards the southern part of Lowell. I pressed a bit more for street names and more specific directions, but he replied by saying he didn't really know, handing me the map and turning to address the next person waiting in line. I did not find that as a ringing endorsement for my chosen path, but I reminded myself, perhaps having to convince myself, that the whole thing was part of this full Kerouac experience I longed for and ventured forth. Heading out and making a couple of quick turns left and right that felt correct, though I certainly wasn't sure if they were, I referred to my map and then quickly realized I was lost and did not know where I was going or where I was. Though it was a Monday morning, the streets were empty and the town felt asleep, owing perhaps to the winter weather, or that it was just after the first of the year, and thus most people were probably on a holiday break. The larger streets turned into smaller ones, warehouses and businesses turning into red brick houses packed tightly one next to another, with yards covered in snow, with the occasional bicycle pointing out of the white. My own awful sense of direction had taken over, and not even the spirit of Kerouac himself could save me and get me on the right course. No matter how many gas stations and convenience stores I stopped in, no one knew the right way, and I shifted my focus from trying to make it to the cemetery to just getting back to a major thoroughfare and some place that looked at least slightly familiar. In this time, before the promulgation of iPhones that made finding your way around and where you needed to go all the more easier, I was in a city where I'd never been before, hopelessly lost, and with no idea how to get where I wanted to go. The smartest thing to do seemed to be head back the way I came, hoping I would either have some kind of inspiration to remember what way I was supposed to go, or that I would make it back to the hotel and ask them for advice, or perhaps a taxi. My pace quickened as I moved the salted and shoveled sidewalks. Suddenly, I felt the ground push me forward, my legs thrust parallel, as I hung for what seemed like an eternity and yet a second as I fell backwards, my right side hitting the ground with a thud deadened by the ice I slipped on. I struggled to my feet, eyes darting to see if anyone had witnessed my fall, feeling the pain in my hip and back from where I landed, marked clearly by the snow and ice collected on my coat. I walked a little bit further, but as time passed, I felt the dull ache in the side and back of my legs, the muscles tightening and movement becoming a greater challenge. With my body hurting and the act of walking becoming more difficult, I caved and called for a taxi to come pick me up. As I was close to Lowell High School, I told the dispatcher I would be waiting there. Looking at this high school where Kerouac himself had gone and that he had wrote about in other novels like Maggie Cassidy, I imagined the young writer there wanting to find a life that went beyond his blue-collar and insular hometown, moving through the circles and cliques of high school life but with one eye on the horizon. In seeing that scene play out in my mind, I could not help but think of my own hometown of Alameda, an insular place as well, and my own struggles growing up there and not feeling it was a place of which I was truly a part. I tried to tell myself I probably would not have stopped to see Kerouac's old high school had I not taken this route to the cemetery, but I did not want to listen, and I anxiously awaited the taxi's arrival to continue on my way. Getting into that old car with yellow cab emblazoned in black writing on the side, its interior smelling vaguely of cigarettes smoked years ago when such a thing was acceptable, I told the driver to take me to Edson Cemetery. "You weren't trying to walk there, were you? It's nearly 3 miles away. That's quite a hike, especially in this weather." I sat back, not wanting to acknowledge my hubris and thinking that I could make it there on foot. In silence, I enjoyed the bit of heat the car's aged heating system provided, my anticipation growing as I thought about this culminating moment, reaching the end goal of this quixotic pilgrimage I'd undertaken. After 15 minutes of driving, we arrived. I asked the cab to wait, and I walked into the cemetery, stopping at the gatehouse and asking the man working where I could find Kerouac's grave. "This map will tell you how to get there," he said, handing me a small white sheet of paper with a crude route drawn in black ink. "But I'm not sure if you'll be able to find it. I don't think anyone cleared off the snow we got." I thanked him and walked away. There's no way his grave would be left covered by snow, I thought. Kerouac was a major American writer. Would Herman Melville's grave be left covered? Emily Dickinson's? William Faulkner's? Ernest Hemingway's? I navigated the little paths in the cemetery until I reached Kerouac's grave, or where it should have been because, as the man had said, it was covered by a foot of snow. You could see the occasional headstone peeking through. I knew none of those were Kerouac since I'd seen pictures of his grave, the headstone lying flat on the ground. Frantically, I tried to guess where Kerouac's grave was and dug up the snow until my fingers were numb. However, without any signpost or direction, finding the right spot was like trying to find the proverbial needle in the haystack, and I rose to my feet, dusting the snow off my knees. With no gloves, I thrust my hands into my pockets, hoping to get the feeling back in them and stop them from shaking. In the pocket, I'd kept a set of rosary beads I'd wanted to leave on Kerouac's grave as some kind of offering, a gift, a tribute to this writer who affected me in such a profound way. In those pictures of his graves that I'd seen, people had left small tokens. Some left handwritten notes, while others left bottles of whiskey or wine or zigzag papers. The religious element of Kerouac's writing was something that stood out to me when I read On the Road, his work being a modern spiritual quest in which the wayfaring pilgrim goes out into the world in search of transcendent experience. So I thought I should leave something that reflected what exactly drew me in. But I couldn't find the graves, so I kept them in my pocket, running my fingers over each of the beads as the numbing cold disappeared. Whether due to the exhaustion of my wanderings throughout Lowell or the frustration of finally reaching this place that carried a spiritual or metaphysical importance to me, not being able to have that moment of communion by leaving this small and particular offering that represented my love for this writer, a lump grew in my throat and tears welled up in my eyes as I fought to keep from falling to the ground, sobbing in frustration and exhaustion. I slunk back to the cab, trying my best to hide the reservoir of tears I was currently maintaining, and asked him to take me back to my hotel. I'd come all this way, traveling halfway across the country in the middle of a particularly cold winter in the Northeast, and I wasn't able to pay my respects like I had wanted, like I had intended. My journey through Lowell, one that was, if not worthy of the On the Road author, then at least in homage to him, had ended in failure, and I left the following day feeling dejected. A few years later, I drove up to Boston from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, with a friend for a week in March. Realizing I was as close to Lowell as I would probably get for a while, I took part of the day and drove up the couple of hours to Lowell on through a bit of serendipitous happenstance, Kerouac's birthday. At a tiny local museum, they were showing a documentary that focused on Kerouac's life in Lowell that I went to see. After that, I got back in my car and, now aided with the iPhone telling me exactly where I needed to go on a gray and chilly, though mercifully not snowy, March day, I drove to the cemetery. Arriving, I found a place to park, and walking by the cottage next to the front gate, I saw the plastic box that held many small maps pointing out where Kerouac's grave was, the same one I had futilely held in my hands years before. I walked to it, in roughly the same area where I'd stood nearly 3 years before, though I realized I wasn't even close to finding it when I dug through the snow on that January morning. I pulled those rosary beads I'd been saving, left them on my grave, ran my fingers over the headstone, took a moment for reflection and appreciation before going back to my car and driving back to Boston. As I've continued in my life as a writer, I've talked with many fellow travelers and compatriots of this literary world, sharing stories about the times they've gone to see the sites and monuments associated with our favorite writers. Sojourns in Oxford, Mississippi to see William Faulkner's house, seeing Hemingway's famous felines in Key West, trips to Walden Pond and numerous locations in London and Dublin and Paris, they will all invariably come up. But I found that I'm often the only one who's made the trip to Lowell, to the hometown and final resting place of one of the most famous American authors in Jack Kerouac. But when I recount my trip to tell about the time that I went to go visit the hometown of my favorite author, I don't speak of that gray day in March with the bare trees waiting for spring to bloom as I finally saw Kerouac's grave and left that very personal memento. Instead, I tell the story of my day spent wandering through a snowy and sleepy city, getting hopelessly lost, falling and hurting myself, conceding and taking a taxi to the cemetery, only to find the gravestone covered by a foot of snow, frantically digging up the snow in a vain attempt to uncover the grave until my hands burned from the cold, and finally giving up and feeling as though I'd let Kerouac and myself down. It's that time that I always remember, it's that story that I always tell, and though it certainly did not go the way I envisioned, it was a time that made me feel a little closer to the author and the work I so greatly revere, like I had participated in something at least a little special and unique, and thus it feels like it wasn't a letdown at all. Thank you.